Senate Revenue Committee. We're dealing with some House bills this afternoon that come from the Treasury Department and largely, from my understanding, deal with how the state copes when we're in financial straits, which accurately describes our current situation. We will open a public hearing on House Bill 2133. Mr. Yates.
Good.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Dick Yates, Legislative Revenue. House Bill 2133 is basically dealing with just accounting for certain fund transfers. The law currently requires that Treasury transfer funds, and this makes the Department of Transportation essentially responsible for transferring those funds. It also deals with the state agency's agreements on interest rates, and it clarifies that the two-year appointment of a bank or trust company for payment of debt service may be renewed indefinitely.
Thank you. Ms. Kessel?
Kessel,
welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Edie Kessel. I'm the cash management analyst with the Oregon State Treasury. House Bill 2133 is a housekeeping measure that proposes revisions to three separate statutes. The changes are intended to clarify existing statutes, make a technical change to administrative task responsibility, and add specific language resulting in more cost-effective management of fiscal agent contracts. The first change you'll see in Section 1 is technical in nature. The statute as currently written could be interpreted to mean that the state treasury is responsible for the transfer of residual monies in agency accounts held at Treasury. Such transactions are routinely carried out by agencies and should not be assigned to Treasury. This has no impact on current practice as the departments currently make these transfers. The second change appears in Section 2. ORS 288020 currently allows the Oregon State Treasury to designate a fiscal agent for the payment of bonds that are issued by the State of Oregon or any subdivision thereof. Current language prohibits the Treasury from extending a fiscal agent contract for more than 1 2-year period. This requires that Treasury enter into a new contract with a fiscal agent after only one extension. This becomes quite costly, and attorneys for both sides are normally retained to negotiate the new contract. The change we are requesting in Section 2 will allow Treasury to continue to review the fiscal agent relationship throughout its contract, but doesn't restrict the number of times that Treasury can extend the fiscal agent's contract. Due to the cost and scope of establishing the fiscal agent relationship, both the bank and the state expect and need a long-term relationship to justify those transaction costs. Section 3 addresses the interest amounts that are charged on borrowed funds and provides for consistency across the interfund borrowing statutes. The current language in ORS 293214, subsection 4, provides for funds to be paid back with the interest that would have been earned had the dollars remained in the fund from which they were borrowed. However, this statute is not used because it doesn't adequately address the credit market risk associated with borrowing. Additionally, the language is inconsistent with ORS 293220, which provides that the interest rate on borrowed funds will be negotiated between the state treasurer and the officer, state department, commission, or board in charge of the borrowing fund. For these two reasons, we are seeking to have the entire paragraph repealed. Subsequently, Section 4 amends ORS 293-220 by adding reference to ORS 293-214, resulting in the same interest reimbursement policy as applies to loans made under 293-210.
Thank you.
Maybe the chair, since we have the cash management person from the Treasury here, she would tell us where all the damn money is.
That's actually in one of the upcoming bills. We get to ask those questions about warrants.
Good. We're going to grill Edie.
Further questions? Thank you, Edie. Close public hearing, open work session on House Bill 2133.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
Move House Bill 2133 to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved House Bill 2133 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion or comments? Any objections? Senator Starr will carry that bill on the consent agenda.
Wonderful.
Open a public hearing on House Bill 2134. Mr. Yates, what does this bill do?
Mr. Chair, this deletes electronic funds transfers, checks, and warrants from words that may be used interchangeably with subaccounts, accounts, and funds. So it sort of makes a distinction between the accounts where the money is going into and the mechanisms through which money is transferred or spent from those accounts. It requires the Department of Administrative Services to determine the appropriate method of payment or transfer when the law specifies that a payment or transfer of monies is to be made by warrant, check, or electronic fund transfer, or an accounting entry. This is an important change, as will be seen in the next bill, essentially, because it essentially gives the department the authority to issue warrants when that is advisable in terms of whether or not there's sufficient money in the general fund. We'll see the significance of that in the next bill.
Thank you. Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury. As Dick indicated, House Bill 2134 is a housekeeping bill clarifying existing language in ORS 291-001 dealing with checks, warrants, and electronic funds transfers. Current language says that the words are interchangeable. The Department of Justice has informed us that this could be construed to mean that they are the same thing. This was not the intent. The goal of this language is to provide flexibility to use appropriate payment methodologies without rewriting every reference to warrant or check in the statutes. The new language provides for this flexibility without blurring the important distinctions between the payment types. No new functionality or flexibility is provided by this change. Section 2 of the bill simply cleans up a reference to this language in a PERS statute. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Thank you very much. Close the hearing on House Bill 2134 and open a work session on 2134.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Move House Bill 2134 to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Senator Corcoran has moved House Bill 2134 to the floor with a due pass. Any discussion? Any objection? Ordered. Senator Ringo, if you'd like to carry that one.
I'd be thrilled. Thank you.
And now, I think this is the most entertaining of this set of bills, House Bill 2135, public hearing.
Entertainment is not an adjective associated with Treasury.
This one's good. Mr. Yates.
Mr. Chair, this bill defines the general fund to include payments into those funds or accounts specifically established in law as funds or accounts in the general fund, makes payments into all other funds or accounts separate and distinct from the general fund, makes trust funds separate and distinct from the general fund, and continuously appropriates monies in trust funds which are not otherwise appropriated by law to the agency administering the trust for the purposes of the trust. This is kind of a catch-all. In most cases, that exists. In a few cases, it's not clear. Revises procedures for registering warrants if the general fund is exhausted. That's where we get into the important issues.
That would be warrants against seated legislators for violating the Constitution.
No, what are they going to take away our
warrants
birthday?
We will get some discussion as to the difference between checks and fund transfers and warrants. Clarifies the authority of the Treasurer to pay monies out of the State Treasury and provides that signing of checks or other payment obligations by state officers is a certification of agency's authority to issue the obligation. specify circumstances under which the treasurer may require an agency to stop issuing payment obligations, and it declares an emergency.
Mr. Bond.
Mr. Chair, for the record, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury. For a bit of background, as the state's cash manager, Treasury has been deeply involved in addressing the general fund cash flow issues resulting from the budget problems this biennium. This resulted in the short-term borrowing legislation passed during the first special session, which allowed for the issuance of tax anticipation notes to address the negative and declining cash balances during the biennium. As we looked at possible options of state response to the deteriorating cash flows, we identified a number of weaknesses in the current statutes and asked the Department of Justice for their review. This bill is a result of that review by the Department of Justice and Treasury during the interim. This work centered on four elements: defining the general fund, determining if the statutes dealing with the general fund cash flow issues are adequate, clarifying when the treasurer can pay money, and determining if the treasurer can direct an agency to stop issuing payment obligations. An area of special concern included those statutes that deal with specific state responses to a general fund that becomes exhausted. This led to what was the toughest question DOJ had to grapple with, and that is, what is the composition of the general fund for these purposes? This question highlights the muddled state of the statutes relative to establishing agency accounts. A number of the sections in this bill address this issue. As is often the case, the simplest approach proved to be the most effective. By simply stating that the general fund consists of funds and accounts that are specifically designated as in the general fund, the muddle is cleared up. Additionally, this is consistent with current DAS and Treasury practice recognizing accounts in the general fund and has no impact on general fund balances as currently reported. These changes are in sections 1 through 4. Another inconsistency in defining the general fund involves trust funds. By their very definition, trust funds are set aside for specific purposes and are not available for general government expenditure, therefore should not be in the general fund. However, there are a few instances where trust funds are in the general fund. We found that the statutes were not sufficiently clear in directing that trust funds are separate and distinct. In response, we strengthened the implication in ORS 293110 that trust funds are not to be placed in the general fund by explicitly stating that they're separate and distinct from the general fund in 293115 sub 1 as amended by the bill in sections 3 and 4. We've also removed these two trust funds from the general fund and made them separate and distinct. Legislative Council used section 5 of the bill to insert a clarification that monies and trust funds are continuously appropriated to carry out the purposes of the trust unless those funds are addressed in other appropriation law. Section 6 aligns ORS 293165 with the changes made in Section 7 and with the removal of the trust funds from the general fund in Sections 3 and 4. Another area that undergoes significant revision by the bill is ORS 293170, dealing with the registration of warrants in Section 7. For a little background in this area, it's important to keep in mind that the state makes payment using three payment methods: checks, warrants, and electronic funds transfers. In terms of volume, we issue the most checks, then EFTs, and then warrants. Checks and EFTs tend to be used for program payments, while warrants are predominantly used to pay the state's bills. Another significant difference in the three payment methods is in the rights gained by receiving one of these payment items. With an EFT, the money is transferred directly to the recipient's account, who has immediate access to the funds. Receipt of a check provides the recipient the ability to make a demand upon the state for the amount owed as represented by the check. A warrant, while normally treated like a demand item, is actually evidence of an obligation owed and a request for payment. This is an important distinction because under certain circumstances, the request for payment can and must be postponed. These circumstances are described in ORS 293170. The statute describes the process put in place should the state run out of money and be unable to pay general fund warrants. So we looked at the statute during our review of all potential cash flow scenarios. We determined that current language needed to be clarified and modernized. While the current language recognizes that there are restricted accounts in the general fund that can only be used for certain purposes, it does not provide for the continued payment of warrants against those restricted funds should registration of warrants be occurring. The current language would prohibit the treasurer from honoring warrants drawn against the lottery fund because the Constitution places the lottery fund in the general fund, even though the lottery fund would have money in it. Federally funded programs could be similarly impacted. We rectify this by creating new language that defines a restricted fund as a fund that is constitutionally or federally restricted, and then carving out restricted funds from the registration requirements later in this section. The new language also modernizes the registration process outlined in the statutes to bring it in conformance with modern banking practice. The current language was developed at a time when it was envisioned that all warrants would be presented directly at Treasury by the payee and individually recorded as they came in. This is not what would happen today. The vast majority of payments or warrants will be presented through the banking system, and the registration will be automated. Since we have no way of knowing the order that they are presented at the banks, we'll register the warrants by number and date of presentment rather than have the warrants registered according to the order in which they've been presented, as the statutes currently read. The warrants will in turn become payable according to the date of registration. The other substantive change in this section eliminates the need for all three of the constitutional officers, the governor, the treasurer, and the secretary of state, to agree that warrants should be registered and replaces that with agreement of any two of these officers.
What is the rationale behind removing one? Is it just for efficiency, or?
It's efficiency and timeliness. We believe that in most instances, probably two of the three constitutional officers will be very engaged, and one of them may not be. And when it gets time to make the decision to register warrants, we'll be at that point in time where warrants are going to be returned because we don't have the money. We've borrowed everything we can. The warrants have to be returned. And so the question gets to be, are we just simply going to return them NSF? Are we going to return them in an orderly manner, registered, pay the 5% interest that the statutes dictate, which would allow for the creation of some kind of a vital secondary market so that they could be traded to provide some liquidity to the holders out there? So it's not whether or not they go back. It's how they go back and whether we're going to pay interest on those. And that interest payment is really key, I think, to a vital secondary market or a liquid secondary market where people can trade them and be able to get some money for what they hold.
And what's a good example of a warrant that we would have outstanding against us?
We pay warrants every day. It's a common payment item that we use for most of the general fund, most general fund expenditures, payments to vendors, most of the bills for the state, payments to medical providers. A number of general fund payments, a lot of times they're reimbursements to other agency accounts where those accounts, program payments were made. For instance, DHS makes payments by check, and a portion of those payments are funded from the general fund, and a portion of those payments are federal dollars. And there'll be a reimbursement process from the general fund to the DHS account, not by a warrant, by an electronic transfer out of the account. But the bulk of it are bills. They're the state's bills. We issue about around 10 million payment items a year, paper payment items. About 500,000 of them are warrants, and the rest are all checks. Section 8 of the bill addresses ORS 293405, which basically says the treasurer will only pay out of the treasury legally authorized payments for which there are sufficient funds to pay. This is policy with a good intent, but it gives the treasurer the responsibility of determining the appropriateness of about 13 million payments a year, payments for which Treasury has little or no information. House Bill 2135 retains this requirement, but adds language stating that whenever a state officer signs or otherwise authorizes a payment item, the officer is certifying that the expenditure is authorized by law. This language describes what authorized by law means, provides that the Treasurer can rely on this certification. Legislative Council made these modifications by inserting new language in Section 8 of this bill and repealing ORS 293405. Another anomaly we detected in the statutes is that there's no provision for revoking an agency's ability to issue payment items. Section 9 of the bill provides the Treasurer authority to revoke this ability under certain circumstances, such as if the agency is out of money, does not have a budget, or is writing checks out of an account reimbursed by the general fund when the general fund is exhausted. Finally, in Section 10 of the bill, we've addressed overdrafts of agency accounts. Occasionally, agencies overdraft their accounts. Generally, these overdrafts are very short in duration. They can result from timing issues, mistakes, or agency practice. This section gives the Treasurer the authority to transfer the overdraft amount from other monies deposited in the state treasury by that state agency, allowing Treasury to clean up the overdrafts that are not resolved in a timely manner. This also gives the Treasurer the explicit authority to charge interest and fees for overdrafts. Treasury currently charges for overdrafts under the authority of the interfund borrowing statutes, but since we're writing a statute addressing the transfer issue, we thought it made sense to have one comprehensive overdraft statute. Sections 11 and 12 remove the trust funds discussed earlier from the general fund. Section 13 cleans up language referred to in statutes, referring to statutes amended by this bill in the native language of an agriculture account. Section 14 repeals ORS 293405, which is discussed earlier, is replaced with language found in Section 8 of the bill. At the suggestion of the Department of Justice, it also repeals ORS 293120, which created in 1915 when a number of accounts were moved to the general fund, is contradictory and appears to no longer perform a useful function. Worse than that, it appears to give some broad but confusing continuous appropriation authority that, while it doesn't appear to be used, is worrisome to us and Ledge Fiscal. For this reason, the Legislative Fiscal Office supports the repeal of this section. That's the extent of my prepared testimony.
Thank you. In Section 10, is my understanding of that is that that is the current procedure, and this just reworks the language. That the Treasury is already doing all of these functions.
In Section 10?
Section 10.
Yes.
Correct.
Right. We're currently doing that, yes.
Wasn't nearly as exciting as you said it was,
Mr. Chairman.
It was a lot more exciting on the outside.
Well, it was. Well, they're just a livelier bunch over there.
Senator Fairhaley.
Yeah. I guess I'm having trouble with the concept of charging another state agency an overdraft account charge. Is that, Mr. Chairman, is that related to the cost to the state treasurer to handle the paperwork load, or is that, is it a punitive attempt to gain somebody's attention? Is it what is the purpose for charging an overdraft assessment against a state agency?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrioli, an overdraft is essentially an unauthorized interfund borrowing. And so to be able to adequately compensate the other funds that are supplying that money, we need to be able to charge interest to the fund that's making that borrowing work. So,
well, you just described what's happening. I want to know why.
That why would be otherwise, if we don't charge them interest, then the funds that are supplying or providing that cash aren't being adequately compensated. So, for instance, the Oregon Short-Term Fund, which is where the cash of the state is held, is investing money. And if account A goes overdrawn by $100,000, that's $100,000 that's not earning interest for the other accounts that are in the fund. And so we charge the interest to the offending fund to make up for that loss to the other fund, and then that interest, then that makes everybody whole through that process.
Right. So, Mr. Chairman, as described, that's essentially a cost that would be absorbed by the offending agency as opposed to absorbed by the lending agency.
Yes.
Okay. And my understanding is that these will be funds that are interfund, Mr. Chairman, funds that come from within the state agency's budget that may be in other accounts.
Mr. Chair, Senator Fairley, if you're referring to the money referred to in the transfer idea, yes, that would come from other monies of that state agency,
okay.
Nowhere else.
And Mr. Chairman, some of these funds will be dedicated funds, and some of them will be specifically limited in their application. And by passing this bill, are we giving you the authority, for instance, to go into a dedicated fund to cover a shortfall? And let me give you a specific example that may be in our recent memory, because it certainly was in the recent past. Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife had some cash flow management issues.
Yes.
And part of that led the agency to use dollars that were dedicated, that were set up for the Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, for instance, or the Bighorn Sheep Foundation. These are dedicated dollars raised for a specific purpose, supposedly held in segregated accounts, which dollars were used for general obligations, general management overheads. And subsequently, on discovery by audit that this borrowing, unauthorized borrowing was going on, it's been incumbent on the agency to pay those dollars back, and I think with interest, to those dedicated funds. Does this bill give your agency the authority to go into dedicated funds and use dollars, even though they're supposed to be a firewall between the general fund spending or the general obligations of the agency and the specific purpose to which the fund is dedicated?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, this wouldn't give us authority to go into the general fund to transfer to a specific account
that's set aside.
If there were legal restrictions on the funds, then potentially we could be prohibited from accessing those funds and transferring it for these purposes.
Okay. And Mr. Chairman,
and if there was a question, excuse me. Yeah. If there was a question, we'd ask our AAG for clarification.
And Mr. Chairman, then just following on that line, if you get a opinion from your AAG that the funds are dedicated and not subject to use to cover an overdraft, where do you then go? If you cannot go to the general fund and the agency doesn't have liquidity, where is the next source of funding to match an overdraft?
Mr. Chair, Cindy Farrelly, you probably are through the budget process.
You mean the E-Board?
The legislature, yes.
How common is that?
Well, the assumption is that they've overdrawn an account and don't have or won't have money to pay it back.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, if there were no other funds available, which in most instances I'm having a hard time, I can't really think of one. In most all instances, there's administrative funds that would be available that we could tap. But assuming there were no other funds, then we'd have to carry the overdraft until there was some kind of resolution.
But Mr. Chairman, just to close this issue, it does not give you authority to borrow from other agencies to cover the debts of an agency with an overdraft.
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrelly, this doesn't. We do have the authority to the Treasurer has quite broad authority to make interfund transfer, interfund loans,
yes,
as it were,
yeah,
from other funds that have excess funds. Mm-hmm. That's assuming they come to us, they have a need, they express the need, we can see evidence of it, we can see that there's a repayment source, and then we'll make an interfund borrowing. This assumes that process hasn't been put in place, and they simply show up on our books as overdrawn. And it happens. We're the bank for agencies.
Right.
Stuff flows, don't always come in timing-wise. This refers more to those situations where I have an agency that's overdrawn $500 or $1,000 or $5,000, and for some reason, months later, it's still on my books. They don't close the account. They have some question about what it came from, and I don't really care. But the reason is, they wrote the check, I paid the check, I just want it taken off the book. I just want it cleaned up. And so this gives me the ability to clean some of this stuff up. That's the genesis behind this.
Senator Ringo, over to you.
No, Mr. Chairman, I was finished, but I just thought that the last record of the transcript, the last few sentences on that transcript, would make a great opening to a collection letter to state agencies. I just want it cleaned up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care why you wrote the check. You signed the check. It's on my books. I want it off.
I was thinking, too. Very well put.
Yeah, yeah. Very
I
understood
sense that.
That
conversation happening many times over.
Yeah.
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. I just wondered the section that about revoking the check. Let's see, what section is that?
I believe that's in section...
Section 9.
9.
It gives three situations where it might choose to do that, or four situations. And seems those all related to maybe the accounts out of money. But I just wondered whether there weren't some circumstances where maybe there's a dispute over whether they really do want to go ahead and continue the transfer, much as a private citizen might decide, you know, I'm going to put a stop order on a check because, you know, there could be a million reasons. And why should we limit that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, there may be, an agency may want to put a stop on a check. What our concern is that, for instance, there are checking accounts that are reimbursed from the general fund, where agencies write checks for whatever reason. Instead of drawing warrants, they're writing checks that are reimbursed out of the general fund or substantially reimbursed out of the general fund. And if we get into the event of a registered warrant scenario, then we can't have them still writing checks drawn against the general fund when we're registering warrants on everything else that's payable from the general fund. So in this instance, the alternative for that agency would be rather than issuing checks, they would need to issue warrants so that the recipients would get in line and be holders of a warrant just like everyone else, mm-hmm. as opposed to writing checks, which would in this instance be overdrawing the account since there wouldn't be any general funds to support it. So it would allow them to look for a different payment alternative, but it would allow us to revoke that the authority for them to issue checks in a circumstance like that. Another instance would be if an agency simply was out of money but kept issuing checks. Right now there's no authority for the treasurer to say you can't do that. There's no authority for anyone to do that.
Well, I guess what I was wondering is, do you want to limit that authority to these four circumstances?
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo,
you're creating authority for revoking the obligation. And I'm just asking whether there might be other reasons you might want to be able to revoke it, and it shouldn't be limited to those four circumstances. Maybe not. That's the question.
Mr. Chair, Senator, we tried to think of what we thought were the circumstances we would face, and okay. not make it so overly broad that it would terrify all agencies that write checks with us, and we have a whole host of them behind us ready to testify against the bill.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Did any of the agencies in drafting, this is pretty more than most bills that we get, have more changes in it than most. Did any of the agencies have problems with any part of it, or were they largely?
Mr. Chair, there were a few questions. Most of the questions we had were from DAS and discussions with DAS. There was a few questions on, actually not on this section. There was a few questions related to the overdraft issue. On the impact. That's Section 10 that we discussed earlier. All questions have been answered, and nobody has been concerned. And if they were, I'm sure they would be here. But we've been able to address all of the concerns so far.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Starr.
I'm curious. The section that it requires the three constitutional officers to agree, we replace that with only having two. Is there a rationale that originally the statute did have three? Is it just too cumbersome? Is that the reason?
Mr. Chair, Senator Starr, I don't know, and we talked about that. You can look to things like the State Land Board, where all three of them sit on it, and things like that. So perhaps that was a convention that was used. And from our perspective, the concern is that you have an outlier, you know, a holdout that doesn't want to do it, doesn't really understand the implications. In the interim, we're sending checks back warrants back that haven't been paid, and we haven't registered them, therefore they're not earning interest. There's not there's not going to be a reasonable or a standard way of paying them back. So we just thought it was prudent. We can envision a very tense, you know, very troubled time if we get to the point where we have to register warrants. And we felt it was prudent that if two of the three were in agreement, that should be sufficient to decide that the state's going to do the best they can to honor these payment items, which are legal obligations of the state, by paying interest and by creating some ordered process for the eventual repayment of the items.
I'm kind of curious, with current events, if there's an emergency clause on this, and we are all well aware of 0103, Would this be helpful, and how often has that actually come up just recently, where agencies just simply don't have the funds? Or is this just a much broader issue then?
Mr. Chair, we're not aware of in recent memory, any living memory, that warrants being registered in Ori. Are you aware of any, Dick? Now, we know that it happened a few years ago. Now, it's probably been 10 years ago in California.
10 years ago in California.
I think it's an important facility that the state have the ability to do that in the event. And let's face it, we're on the cusp now.
Uh-huh.
So I think we're going to be, through effective management of the Treasurer's Office, DAS, the Governor's Office, and the legislature, I think we're going to weather through it. But we're as close as we've ever been. And so it's important that not only do we have, the statute allows for it now, the statute just is really unworkable given the current state of the financial industry. Uh-huh. And so this modernizes it so we could actually put it in place if we had to.
So you find in your office that we currently, as we close out 0103, as close as we've been in your tenure, the situation that this really unique circumstance would actually might come into play, or
absolutely
within reason. That,
in the 13 years I've been there, this is clearly as close.
Senator Ringo.
Just my discussions with Senator Starr here, I think he shares my concern. I don't know that it makes sense to go from 3 constitutional officers to 2. I mean, your response was, well, we could be in tense times, and maybe you'd have an outlier that might not go along. But, boy, it does seem to me that maybe it would be all the more important that all of the chief players be on board when we are having such difficulties. And I guess I'd like to explain just a little. I mean, you said there's an outlier. That means maybe somebody just doesn't agree with the issuance of the warrants.
Mr. Chair, Senator Ringo, again, I think it's a timeliness issue more than anything. For instance, in the discussions you have right now, the Treasurer and the Governor are very engaged. We've got the cash or the lack of cash in the general fund. The Governor has the budget. The Secretary of State isn't as engaged. If we get to that point, you would hope that through the process he would be brought up to speed. But when we get to the point where we've borrowed everything we can, we've done all of the external borrowing, we've issued the TANs, we've done all of the interfund borrowing that we can possibly do, we're out of money. We can't take the general fund anymore in the hole, and we're going to have to return warrants. That's the Treasurer's call. That's nobody else's call. That's the Treasurer's responsibility under statute. His duty is to say, we can't do it anymore. We're going to have to return these items. When that happens, then the question is, do we return the items, just send them back NSF and not pay interest, not go through the registration process, the registration of warrants process, or do we go through that process, which allows for the payment of interest, which creates this registration process so there's an orderly way of repaying those items eventually down the road when the general fund does have money. Those are the two scenarios. It's not whether or not they're returned. Right. It's whether or not they're returned in this orderly manner. So there's really no good reason for anyone, for one of the three, to decide not to do it now. But when we were envisioning, as they called it on the House side, this was the doomsday bill. Well, when we were envisioning the doomsday scenario for us of having to register warrants, what's the worst thing that could happen? Really, registering warrants is a horror. But the worst thing that could happen was if one of the three didn't agree and we had to send them back NSF. That just makes that a lot worse. And so that's where it came from. It doesn't make or break the bill. We just, as we went through this, that just seemed to be one weakness in the process that we thought would be important to try to fix.
So I don't understand, if the Treasurer is the one who makes the call now, that other two constitutional officers have to sign off on it. Is that correct?
For a registration of warrant process to begin.
It is. Okay. And then the process begins under the doomsday scenario.
Yes. But again, the treasurer will be the one that brings them to the table that says, it's time to register warrants because we're out of money and I'm not going to pay warrants anymore.
Uh-huh. And then the change that's contemplated on, I guess, line 18 would be one of the constitutional officers would then come in, I guess most likely the governor at that point, and assist in the process.
Well, the process, what we envision is that the treasurer will sit down with the three of them and discuss the issue, mm-hmm. and hopefully all three will move forward in lockstep. But if not, if one of the other two, one of the two agrees, then the treasurer can register the warrants.
Of course, Kate. Please. Where's the treasurer today?
We don't care about the treasurer.
Like me.
Yeah, we said, oh, boy.
We don't care about the treasurer. We just want to know where the money is.
That's where he's trying to find it. For the record, Kate Richardson, Oregon State Treasury. To speak to this issue particularly, because it's about the only one that I can speak to, and as we testified on the House side, there was some question about that, too, why going from a unanimous consent to a single. And because the horrible would have already happened, and that's returning the warrants, and that happens without anyone's decision, it's more protection for the people, really, if they're going to get, it's going to be handled in an orderly manner and with interest bearing. And for one of three to hold out on that issue, and who knows what the situation would be, and we don't anticipate that anyone would, but because it would be such a situation, that means that one person would be holding up an orderly process to be handling this, and it would just become all the more worse. And as Representative Williams put it on the House Revenue Committee, it would be like asking all 90 of you to agree in a very tense situation to, a good public policy choice. But maybe not everyone would see it that way, and sometimes someone just holds out for no reason at all. This still requires a majority vote, and it would be, and the three work together on the land board. But because the horrible would have already happened regardless, there didn't seem a reasonable or a good reason to make it worse.
You ready to get your names?
And we don't have, and we've had no objection from the governor or the secretary of state on it. That was the other point I wanted to add.
Thank you.
We should get your name, Kate.
I did.
Oh, we got it. Great.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I guess maybe Kate should sit down again.
You knew that was going to happen.
Did you, Mr. Chairman, was there a research of why the unanimous vote was required? Is there some kind of a historic or precedential documentation that says why we did? Why we require these three to be unanimous in their decision to register warrants?
Mr. Chair, Senator Farrielli, no. We recognize the statutes were old. They're old statutes. They've been in place a long
old
time.
It doesn't mean it's no good.
But no. We didn't. In our discussions, again, we were looking from the prudence of whether or not it made sense for one person to be able to hold it up, given the fact that the warrants were going back anyway. From our perspective, for the public, it's only a bad thing. Once you get to this point, registration of warrants should almost be an automatic, but it's not. And the statute calls for this agreement of the officers for the registration of warrants to go in place. If that doesn't happen, from the public's perspective, that's only bad. Because they're not going to earn interest. They're not going to be able to, at least getting a 5% coupon on an instrument, on a negotiable instrument, they're going to be able to go to their bank or to somebody's going to be out there buying them up. So they're going to get get some interest or get some income back.
Sherman, I see there is some logic to the argument, but there's some countervailing logic, too, that maybe we're overstepping, and that is this. The point has been made in a doomsday scenario that the registration of warrants is probably a detail, and that it ought to even be automatic. But there is a sort of a solemnity being observed here that three top elected officers of the state of Oregon got together and looked at this disaster and said, look, this is the worst case scenario. And by our signatures, we recognize how bad this situation is. And nobody's playing games, and this isn't politics, and nobody's going to weasel out of this. This is bad, and it's really bad. And giving the out for one of these officers, the highest elected officers in the state, to say at some point in time, I never signed that. I don't think that's a good thing. I think the reason to have all three of these folks agree, in, you know, even in the face of disagreement or personal distaste for the process, this comes under the heading of duty. And recently there was an interesting occurrence on the state land board. We had a split vote on the Sandy River navigability condition. Or was it the John Day?
It was the Sandy.
And, I think they know.
Okay.
Yeah,
all right. And I think that sent messages and sort of little mini shockwaves through the system on an issue that really there never has been a core requirement for unanimity on navigability decisions. But it's been... it's had political outfalls and some political ramifications, and there's been change in direction as a result of that one dissenting vote, even though it didn't change the outcome of the navigability. I wouldn't change this just because it is such a monumental and, as I think, accurately portrayed, a doomsday resolution. This is bad. This is the worst it gets when the state has to basically... issue the script, and I do applaud the department for coming here and saying there ought to be an orderly progression to a secondary market. That, to me, speaks to the professionality of this organization and then the forethought. But this the state land board is in fact the final protector of the full faith and credit of the state of Oregon. And if you hold back to the theory that whatever we have is based on the value of the land and the state land board essentially is the controller of all the state's assets held into public trust, which are, you know, which is the full faith and credit of the state. It doesn't say two of the three. It says all three. And so I guess I would argue that if you don't want to politicize this, don't give somebody any weasel space. They're all three going to have to sign it.
Senator Starr.
Yeah, that's Senator Farrelly has well articulated, I think, my initial reason for bringing this up. So I concur.
Do y'all know in the California situation a decade ago, do you know what the circumstances, when they did it, and in particular to the issues that Senator Starr and Farrelly raised, was it what their statute says with their constitutional officers?
Mr. Chair, I don't.
You know. Anything further? Thank you. Appreciate the very, very much.
Or just get that section.
Close the public hearing on 2135.
Is there anything in there about who turns the lights out when everybody has to leave?
And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2136. Mr. Yates.
Thought we were done. Mr. Chair, you all know the program. Clarifies the maturity date restrictions relating to certain investments by local governments.
That is the shortest. Boy, that's why you get to the big bucks. Thank you, Mr. Bond. This is the last one.
Hey, yes, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Darren Bond, the Director of Finance for the Oregon State Treasury, and this one is a lot easier than the last one. House Bill 2136 clarifies conflicting language related to maturity date restrictions on local government investments. ORS 294135(1) gives general authority for a local government investment officer to invest out to 18 months or the date of anticipated use of the funds, whichever shorter. Paragraph A of that subsection allows for longer maturities if the governmental unit has adopted an investment policy that's been reviewed by the Oregon Short-Term Fund Board. Paragraph B deals with matching investment maturities to anticipated cash flow needs, but for some reason refers to a period exceeding 1 year rather than 18 months. As the authority to invest out to 18 months already exists, there's no practical or functional purpose for the shorter maturity. And the only effect of the paragraph is to allow for matching maturities to anticipated uses beyond 18 months. These changes clarify that as the purpose of the paragraph. Section 3 provides no additional authority or restriction from that found earlier in the statute and is therefore removed.
Committee.
It's another one to get really excited about, Mr. Chair.
I told you there was a little action on 2135. Close the public hearing on 2136. Open work session on House Bill 2136.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Ringo.
I move we pass House Bill 2136 to the floor of the Senate with the two pass recommendations.
Motions. What's the matter?
Senator Ringo has moved House Bill 2136 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Vice Chair Farioli, would you like to carry that?
I'll be honored to carry, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Put that on the consent
that
agenda.
So insincere.
3 out of 4.
You're dripping insincerity.
Trying to have it cleaned up before the committee meeting.
Yeah,
clean it up.
Senator Starr will take the lead on House Bill 2135, and we're adjourned.
Take the lead on 2135? We didn't pass that.
Take the lead on fixing.
Okay.